Our next case for argument this morning is United States v. Keith White. Yes, Mr. Tolliver.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Terry Tolliver, and I'm here today representing Mr. White. I have requested to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
It's fine.
This court previously stated in United States v. Sinclair that we may only overturn precedent for a compelling reason. And that's why Mr. White is here today, is that he believes that there is a compelling reason to overturn precedent, including Stinson, Adams, and Smith. And the reason for that is the United States Supreme Court's recent decision in West Virginia v. EPA, where the court held that agencies must point to clear congressional authorization when exercising authority, and that certain highly consequential administrative assertions of authority provided reason to hesitate before concluding that Congress intended to confer the authority an agency is asserting that it has. Here the question is whether the career offender guideline, whether the use of an offense described under the Controlled
Substances Act. Is there anything that distinguishes the career offender guideline from every other guideline? Because Congress didn't say that 1 kilogram of heroin would get so many offense levels, nor did it say what the relation is between bank robbery and drug offenses. So if I understand your argument correctly, all of the guidelines are invalid, root and branch.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Congress told the Sentencing Commission to create guidelines, and it left the Sentencing Commission free to decide what would be in them. Your attack on this guideline seems to me equally applicable to every single guideline. So the whole guideline goes poof. Am I understanding your argument correctly?
Your Honor, I think the difference here is that when we look at the guidelines, especially when we compare the crime of violence versus controlled substance offense, is that
I'm asking you to tell me how your argument applies to other guidelines, ones other than the one that you have challenged. Is there a ground on which you think they are valid, even though this, on your view, is invalid?
Well, here we're looking at
I'm asking about the relation of your argument to other guidelines. There, not here.
Absent a specific guideline, I think we would have to look at each one and make that determination. But
as you must know, a lawyer's failure to engage with a hypothetical question is not a good sign.
I understand, Your Honor. But the guideline itself, I think our position would be that when the guideline states X, there is no reason to go beyond that and seek the and look to the commentary. And the reason why it's different here is as we mentioned, that when you look at a crime of violence, it specifically includes those attempts or threatened use. Under the Controlled Substance Act, there is no such language, and that's being read into that rule. And our position would be that there is no congressional authority that gives the Sentencing Commission the right to add that in there. What courts do day in, day out is interpret rules and statutes. There is no reason why we need to give deference to an agency here. This does not go to the agency's special expertise. This is simply looking at the rule and determining whether a specific crime falls under that.
You're kind of blending your attacks on the commentary here that makes inchoate crimes, drug crimes, as a matter of the Sentencing Commission's interpretation of the guidelines. You've got a major questions doctrine argument, and you've got an argument based on the Supreme Court's decision in Kaiser refining our deference. And if you could just kind of keep those two separate. So your first attack is that all the commentary is subject to the major questions doctrine, and this commentary flunks the major questions doctrine, I think, if I'm understanding your argument correctly. And then you're separately arguing that under the Kaiser decision's refinement of our deference, this commentary flunks. I mean, is that a fair characterization of your two arguments?
That would be fair, Your Honor. Okay. I think, well, and this court has addressed Kaiser many times. And I think when you look at Kaiser, when you look at West Virginia versus EPA and then compare that to Kaiser, I think it enhances, it demonstrates what the court was referring to when it mentioned Kaiser. I think the biggest difference that you see here is that there is a compelling reason to overturn the rule. And it's because people like Mr. White and their families suffer as a result of this. When you apply an enhancement that isn't specifically mentioned, and they have to endure a much longer sentence than they otherwise would have, that is something that this court should consider.
I'm not sure which part of Judge Sykes' question you're addressing. Were you addressing there the Kaiser argument? The question I have on that branch of your argument is, did Kaiser overrule Stinson? Because the justices keep saying that they alone have the province to overrule their decisions, and we're supposed to follow them even if we think they're hard to reconcile with more recent decisions. So has Stinson been overruled?
We think so, Your Honor.
How and where?
Well, I think when you look at the landscape with this rule.
No, to show that the Supreme Court has overruled the decision, you point to a statement in the Supreme Court saying Stinson is overruled. In Kaiser, there's a footnote treating Stinson as a distinct problem. That's not an overruling decision. Is there some other thing we've missed?
Your Honor, I think we would just rely upon the language of Kaiser, where it says that you start by exhausting the traditional rules of construction. And when we apply that here, we don't.
And so what do you do about the Supreme Court's established doctrine that courts of appeals are supposed to follow their decisions until the justices themselves expressly overrule them, that having an inconsistent later decision isn't enough?
Well, I think the later decision informs Kaiser. When West Virginia versus EPA states that we've got to look at whether Congress intended for this to happen, and here Congress knows how to define the crime. It knows how to include.
Look, I am asking you a concrete question about a concrete doctrine of the Supreme Court dealing with the relation among decisions of the Supreme Court. And your answer has nothing to do with that question. I wish you'd address my question.
Your Honor, I think the best way to address the question is I think there is a lot of confusion around the doctrine. And as we noted, the circuits are split among this, even within circuits.
I'm asking you to address decisions of the Supreme Court and what they have said. You can't answer that question by pointing to decisions of other circuits. Maybe this is just hopeless.
Your Honor, other than when we look at Kaiser, for example, it says you use traditional rules of statutory interpretation. And I think that's the best way to answer your question, is that when we look at it that way and we apply it, there is no reason to go to the guidelines because the rule itself tells us what should be considered. And Your Honor, absent any further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of time for rebuttal.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wood.
Your Honor, may it please the court. Terry, briefly, unless there are questions, Stinson cannot simply be viewed as having been refined, just to take up Your Honor's language, by Kaiser, I think, because not just the footnote, but also because it contemplates unambiguous guidelines, and ambiguity is central to Kaiser. So overruling would be the necessary step. And the only other thing without prompts that I would add to our brief is that—
I must say, who knows whether that's true or not? It's obvious that the extent of deference to administrative decisions is very much up in the air in the Supreme Court. I have no
agreed.
I claim no prevision into what's going to happen.
Yes, and I'm
just trying to figure out how their established doctrine applies to this case.
And their established doctrine, I think, can only the point I meant to make is that their established doctrine is Stinson, and Stinson applies, and that is what this court should apply and has applied in the past. And the other thing I would add is that has changed since the filing of our brief is that there is a sentencing commission that's in business, and that amplifies an ancillary point in our brief. If there are specific questions about.
But the Sentencing Commission hasn't done anything yet about this, has it?
It has not.
Right? If let's suppose Kaiser implicitly ditches Stinson. If what the Sentencing Commission is thinking of doing is revising the application note, it's just whistling in the wind. If what it's thinking of doing is revising the text of the guideline, then it can do something. But it hasn't published its proposals yet, has it?
It has not.
Right.
there are the earlier proposals from a previous forum. The only evidence that I can think of that is all relevant to that question, and it is only from the side, is repeated denials of certiorari of Stinson-oriented Kaiser cases before the Supreme Court. There's maybe one or two pending that I'm aware of. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure we can take any of that to the bank.
It's the Supreme Court's decision to make.
And the court often lets these sorts of issues percolate for a while until there's an entrenched circuit split.
Right.
We've got
we have.
And they may be hoping the Sentencing Commission will fix all of this.
And it's a layered split, which makes it more complicated. I will say Mr. Tolliver has effectively preserved this issue for further review. In that case, maybe this is the one. I don't know. We don't know. But it's the Supreme Court's business.
What's your best shot if Kaiser governs?
Best shot. So, as in Stinson didn't just have an imprecise analogy, but Stinson was quite simply an our case. That's the idea. And so Kaiser says complete supplant, right? My best argument is, so then I have to set aside the different way that the guidelines work with congressional review, I suppose. And my best argument is that in 4B, in A, 4B1.2A, the word is requires some annotation of attempt and inchoate crimes. The word prohibits does not, and also encompasses laws that prohibit means prevent drug distribution and manufacture. And I would say contra Campbell, which says that like anti-loitering laws might hinder drug distribution. 846 is the centerpiece of the US Code's attempt to prevent drug distribution and drug manufacturing. And so that's my best case. It feels a little bit like climbing out of a well, but it's my best case if Kaiser is fully on point with Stinson, but we don't know that.
The inchoate crimes adopt the same penalty structure as the
there's that
crimes.
But not just that. So I think it would be important to specify that 846 might be distinguishable from attempt in that vein, in the sense that, again, 846 is, it's the, we charge, you have to charge 841 at the same time you charge 846. We charge it all the time. It is the main method for preventing widespread drug manufacturing and distribution in the United States Code. Attempt is by necessity, or aiding and abetting, or you know, whatever, is something that is read into cases sometimes via jury instructions, sometimes via tacking on section 2. It's not the most common count one in by and large in drug cases.
Attempt and aiding and abetting are not distinct crimes. They're methods of proving criminal liability for the
I have that argument
crime.
Next
okay.
month, yes.
but I get the I distinction.
Guess, yeah, that's, it is a nuanced argument that isn't, you know, fully fleshed out by department guidance, but I would say the best argument is verb use plus prevents as an analog to prohibits, and the central role of 846 in
preventing. So it depends on what the meaning of is.
It does. It does. Although I...
That wasn't successful.
That was, yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to, I can CF that, I suppose, and put it aside. But I genuinely, Stinson is not red flagged. Stinson has been preserved. Stinson is the case. For now.
You pointed out that the Supreme Court has denied certiorari in a number of these cases.
Yeah.
The most recent one is Moses, which was denied on Monday. And I've read the Solicitor General's brief in Moses. And the Solicitor General's brief says, well, we here at the Justice Department all believe, or at least the Solicitor General believes, that Kaiser has displaced Stinson, and we're no longer, as an institutional matter, relying on Stinson. But it doesn't make any difference to anything. That's what the Solicitor General said. It's not exactly what you're saying.
Well, the Solicitor General's brief... and I've actually had a lot of, privileged communications. I won't get into that. I've had a lot of conversations with people in the department about this, including the person, my main contact is the person who drafted that, the Moses certop.
Jenny Ellickson?
Yes.
That's the bottom attorney on
that. Oh, yes. Yeah, draft. I said draft, not approved, finally. But the repeated verbiage in those position statements is that we have taken, that the Department of Justice has in the past taken the position that I believe that will be the position. That's my understanding. But the Solicitor General reserves the right to take a formal final position before the Supreme Court when it's a merits brief.
Oh, that's
and
true.
I think that verbiage is
briefs
leading.
In opposition and merits briefs are different things. And of course, White was not a case about the treatment of inchoate offenses. It was a different rose in a different way. No, I'm not trying to pin anything on you. As I said, my problem here has just been to figure out what it is the Supreme Court is telling us to do at a time when doctrine is unsettled in the Supreme Court and may get more or less settled.
The department, I will say that the position of the department, even as it shades in that direction, is consistently for the court not to take any of these cases to put full stamp of Kaiser on Stinson. So whatever the nuances of that the Solicitor General ultimately adds to the position about how and why and the extent, maybe the coextensive extent of Kaiser applying to Stinson, the position is don't take these cases now and put Kaiser on all of this. So that is consistent with. And I've tried to take a fully consistent position. I've cited Moses because it is a case that exists, but it's neither the court of this circuit nor the Supreme Court's jurisprudence. But
and on the merits, should we get there, your argument is that the guideline in question, the definition of controlled substances offense, is genuinely ambiguous within the sense meant by Kaiser, and that it falls within the commentary falls within the zone of ambiguity that has been identified, and I don't think there's much argument about the Sentencing Commission's expertise in this area or authority in this area. It's really those first two parts of the refined
analysis. So we have the position that's been advanced by the Solicitor General that prohibits means that you don't even need to get into the zone of ambiguity question, but this court has said in Smith that it is, and in Adams and in Raup, that it is ambiguous in a way that's, I think, inescapable. So that first position, which we preserve, I think has to give way to the notion that it is ambiguous in this circuit. That is this circuit's holding. So the rest, our argument proceeds mostly from B in that part of the brief. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Tolliver.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, I think our position would be that there is some confusion here, and that based upon the Supreme Court's recent decision in West Virginia versus EPA, that absent specific congressional authority, the court should just look to the plain language of the rule. inchoate crimes are not included in that, and that's simply what we're asking, is that it shouldn't be read into that. And for those reasons, absent any other questions by the panel, Mr. White would request that this court vacate his designation as career offender and send this case back to the district court for resentencing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.